territory. There ain't nobody out there gonna mess with me, 'cause I'm big and hard and battle scarred and getting long in the tooth. Desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Like to shoot at me, but they miss. Yeah, I'm alone. And I ain't never been trapped. And God help the people that think they got me cornered at last. Tracking. I've been running since I was 3. Born in Louisiana swamp, moved with the pack to Tennessee. Raised by black and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. They said, now boy, you're gonna have to quit your howling soul. Staying up all night chasing lasses by the moon, laying up all day on the porch playing guitar tunes. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf, and I no longer run with the pack. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf, and I don't ever look back. Yeah,
reminds me of a series I watched. I like cowboy movies. They don't make enough of them, but they're making more of them down in Australia now, and they have been for quite a while, and they're good movies. This series is called Wild Boys, so if you get up on Netflix or Hulu, I think I got mine on Hulu, look up Wild Boys. I think you'll really enjoy it. A real outlaw cowboy film series. Yeah. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance calling. Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the bunker on December the 22nd. And we just passed the winter solstice yesterday on Sunday. And I hope all you people out there recognized it as more important, really, than the so-called Christmas, because wouldn't be the right date anyhow. It should be on the 21st is the day we should be celebrating, as the All-Father Sun begins to heat up a little more as the Earth spins forward. Now don't argue with me. That's the way it happens. Anyhow, I start to get warmer and everybody starts celebrating up there in the cold climes, and we celebrate here ceremonially. And it's Moon's Day, and right here P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you keep up with your dues. And I think about everybody's up with their dues for this month, or donations, and we appreciate that. I'm starting to get mail back from the prisoners who've gotten money orders from us. And I think I'll read a couple of them to you here. Let me check it out. I recently sent a couple of CDs out to a POW on the West Coast just to make sure they get through. Actually, they went straight through, and usually you have to order them from the distributor. So I don't know whether that'll work for every prison, but it worked in this case. But I think I'll send them from the producers pretty soon. If you got any CD, especially skinhead music, a lot of the boys like that. If you got any CDs you want to get rid of with skinhead stuff, send them down to me, and I've got at least one guy that can get them right in the regular mail. And or if you want to, you email me and I'll give you his address. So anyhow, he was real happy. He said, "Racial greetings. Just wanted to tell you I received the two CDs sent. I received them today. I'm really thankful for them. I hope you are staying warm out in your area, and you all have a good Yule time. As for me, I'll just be sitting around listening to my new CDs. Thank you once again. Anytime you feel the need to send them in, appreciate them all. I'll keep on working on the stamps to send you. I just got a new Selly, and he's a true comrade. He is straight edge as well and has my same beliefs as well as yours. Anyhow, Tom, I'm going to get this out to you now. Racial respects from California." Meanwhile, I'm going to dig around the bunker here and find some more skin CDs that I've had for years that I've listened to many times, and I'll send those out to them. When we run out of the used ones, we'll start ordering them from a distributor. Got a nice Christmas card from George Loeb Jr. down there in Indiantown, Florida prison down there, Martin Correctional Institution. And that was nice. I've got several Christmas cards from POWs. Here's a note that came along with the card from George Loeb down there in Florida. "Dear Brother Tom, greetings to you, sir. This is just a cover letter to introduce the enclosures. One is a little political commentary with some humor to lighten up the hate factor. The other item is probably more interesting. The state of Florida ordered that the institution to answer my grievance a second time, and amazingly, the responding officer of this institution, assistant warden, who is black, by the way, again provided substantially the same answer as before, again admitting to doing what the rule clearly do not permit. I will continue with the grievance procedure. The idea is to make a return of my mail so controversial and so costly that they will simply stop doing it. Time will tell, but I know this. I, like you, will remain relentless in the pursuit of justice and more for myself and our people. Happy Yule." Okay, George, thank you. I'm glad I've got my Dragon speech to print program really working good now, so I can crank out a letter in no time flat. I'm a hell of a typist. I think I did take one semester of typing. It didn't latch on to me, and I still type with one or two fingers. So I need that Dragon speech to print program. Now, George sent me back a form letter from the warden's office. Now, get this. "Your request for administrative remedy or appeal has been reviewed and evaluated in the following determination. The book in question was sent from Thomas Metzger, who founded white supremacist group White Aryan Resistance, WAR. All correspondence from his organizations has been forwarded to the inspector's office for review. The book was rejected based on the security threat group association it was being sent from. Formal grievances denied. See, that's what white POWs have to go through. Now, you know they're letting all kinds of anything go through to black prisoners. And I don't blame the blacks so much if they can get away with it, do whatever, but it's the white administrators who I hate, and the white guards who persecute and terrorize white prisoners. If a white prisoner is doing well and going by the rules, he should be able to get almost any book he wants. What the hell is he going to do? Even if I send him a book on explosive, what the hell could he do? Inside the cell? This is signed, the signature of Warden's assistant warden. And it looks like a white man's script to me. It doesn't look like a nigger script to me. So anyhow, this is what guys in the joint have to deal with, and that's why they need your moral support as much as possible. You can go up on our website and get all the list of POWs that we've got up there, and you should be writing them or sending them a Christmas card or something, for Christ's sake. Just remember, it could be you in there. Now here's a note back from Dennis Mahon, who's in the federal prison. In fact, let me tell you something. It's easier to get books and things into federal prisons than state prisons. Some of these state prisons, especially down in the Bible Belt, Old Testament, Baptists, and so forth, they really like to screw with prisoners all the time. Anyhow, here it is. Tom, now, if you had any doubt of this, if you had any doubts of what I'm going to read you here, I don't know what to tell you. Tom, even in 2010, my attorney, Deborah Williams, told me that you were the target, main target of the BATF. I was sentenced to 40 years. My attorneys thought the U.S. attorneys were going to cut a deal, try to reduce my sentence to 5 or 10 years if I would lie and falsely say that some white supremacist leaders ordered me to do the Scottsdale bombing, which I had nothing to do with. Deborah said they finally realized I was a true white separatist militant who would just tell them to go to hell. So they did something, physically visit me. Also, they did come around and visit and talk to me. I will ask the staff here to see if you can visit me. Well, I've sent a visitor form in, and as soon as I get okayed, and there should be no reason not to be okayed. I never was convicted or charged with a felony. A misdemeanor, illegal assembly on private property that we had permission to be on. Oh, man, they get away with anything when they go after us. So anyhow, that's what I figured all along, that they were going to try to get to me through Mahon, Dennis Mahon and his brother Daniel. But they turned my house and my bunker upside down, and they didn't find anything they could catch me on for charge me with a felony. Now, they had 6 or 8 guys going through the house. Plus, they had sheriff's deputies out front. They had, well, there must have been 10 or 12 cars here when they went through. So if they can't find anything illegal in the house after going through it for several hours with 6 or 7 agents, I bet they were very unhappy. I bet they communicated with Obama and said, shit, we thought we had him, like we always think we have him, but they didn't have me. Could have saved the taxpayers a hell of a lot of money if they'd have taken my word for it. You're not going to find anything illegal in that house. The funny part about it was, I think I said before, one of the Treasury agents or the ATF agents said, you got anything in the garage? And my wife says, oh, I got some Miracle-Gro for the garden. Oh, who knows what they might try to do on that, you know. I should have said, oh, actually, it's for my 10 acres of pot back here in the woods. You know, time flies. I don't know why I didn't, but I was sitting around here yesterday, and I said, how long have I been at this? I'm thinking back. I've been at this over 50 years. I started as a right-wing conservative type, right-wing Republican. went to work on the Goldwater campaign, then joined the John Birch Society, and a little over 50 years I've been at this. And the damn feds haven't sent me a check yet. It's funny, a lot of the right wing, they'll say, well, he hasn't been put in prison or put in jail, so he must be working with the feds. And then if he put you in jail, they'll say, well, he probably deserved it. He shouldn't have done it that way. He didn't know what he was doing, and there's nothing we can do for people like that. So you can't win with these right-wingers. Well, let's go back to school here. We're going to talk about this book, Hitler, the Founder of Israel. Some of you may get bored with this, but I think it's something you should hear, because you've heard two sides of the stories. One side is, yeah, they murdered 6 million Jews. The other side, oh, they didn't kill any at all. Or the other side, Hitler was the most wonderful guy that ever lived, almost like the mythical Jesus. And the other side, he's a rat. He's a no good son of a gun. As usual, these things usually meet halfway in between truth and fact. The NSDAP, into which one could get through a long, dark hallway at the time, still moderate as far as a battle with Judaism was concerned. In northern Germany sprouted the German Socialist Party. Some of Munich's party members strived for a merger with those people. Others demanded that the northern Germans dissolve their party and join the NSDAP unconditionally in groups or as one. Those in Munich who stuck to a democratic leadership of the party, which existed until the summer of 21, saw themselves opposing others who wanted to see Hitler as the leader with dictatorial powers. The best horse of the NSDAP stable and the successful inspirer of the masses took to travel. He stayed in Berlin for a few weeks, where he lived mostly in salons. When he returned to Munich, he found an opposing faction. In effect, on July 11, 1921, Hitler gave an explanation for his resignation from the NSDAP. Quote, it is watered down and isn't able anymore to lead a battle for destruction of the Jewish international forces in our country. The situation got serious, and the party became afraid that without its draft horse and best speaker, it will perish into nothing. Hitler demanded in writing an acceptance of his position as the first chairman and with dictatorial authority. Party leadership agreed as follows, quote, in recognition of your extraordinary sacrifices in the interest of the movement, with only honorary rewards for your accomplishments, for your unique oratory talent, we are giving you dictatorial powers and welcome this cheerfully if, after returning to the party, you will take over the position of first chairman, unquote. So Hitler's plan fruited, and on that day, the National Socialist Movement, with its good intentions, became Hitler's movement against the Jews. The main goal of the destruction of capitalistic economic exploitation was from now on overshadowed by the goal of Jewish expulsion, and in charge of this was the Führer himself. Some people resigned from the party, among them a former sergeant in the Trick Regiment, Rudolf Schlussler. He immediately moved from the party's office in the Sternenneckerbrau into the Jewish Alfonser Bank, where 6 years after Hitler's capture of power he was still active. The new leader traveled a lot and made contacts with National Socialists in Austria and Sudetenland while collecting money in Switzerland from just about anyone, including Jews. The latter were afraid of the Bolshevik dispossession. Party's publicity leaflets also reached Swiss industrialists. The flyers carried hints of communist danger, which impressed them terribly. You see, if you scare the money boys enough, you can get quite a bit of what you want. Instead of going out on the street and finding a lone Negro to beat up, you need to put the fear in the boys that control the money, the ruling class. Especially was the affected Colonel Perchler, founder of the Swiss Fatherlands Union. He invited Hitler to Zurich's Hotel St. Gotthard, close to the Villa Wessendonck, where Hitler presented his program in full of 40 renowned people, in front of 40 renowned people. Large sums of money were given to him by industrialist Oehler and by sugar manufacturer Frankenthal. Now, why would they give Hitler all that money if he wasn't going to go along with what they wanted? Hitler also went to his birthplace in Braunau. Then he visited Linz, the city of his love, on the River Danube. At the same time, he elucidated his fellow countrymen in Innsbruck, Salzburg, Holstein, Vienna, and St. Pölten about the Jewish question. Even there, he used a right tone. Quote, "In an endless love, as a Christian and as a human being, I have learned in many places how our Lord finally took charge and raised the whip to chase the profiteers, a breed of vipers, out of the temple." Now, this was a mythical thing, having been researched about this so-called Jesus that never existed, and chasing the moneylenders out of the temple. That would have been a tremendous feat. They had all kinds of temple guards in that place. I forget, it was 2 or 3 acres big, this place. And for one guy to go in there and acting as a human and chasing the money changers out would not have happened. Anyhow, that's a little side issue. And I'm aware of my deepest feelings after lapsed 2,000 years is still, in fact, tremendous, and because that of our Lord had to bleed to death on the cross. Now, in his table talk, he talks just the opposite. And what was the leader of the SS going around Germany building pagan temples and training young people in them, if Hitler was so Christian? If the movement took over the southern region of the country, in the north it was not developed yet. Then a man came to help about whom will be said more in the next chapter. In October 22nd, Julius Streicher won over a Nuremberg group of to the National Socialist Party, and shortly thereafter the rest of the party followed. At a meeting in Austria, in Salzburg, the North German Socialist Party was dissolved, and at the turn of 1922-23, most of its members joined the NSDAP. To Northern Germany went a pharmacist of Landshut, SA leader Gregor Strasser, with his brother Otto. Naturally, it was thought that by gaining strength through such tactic, a revolt against Berlin would break out and the party would take over the whole state. After a bloody downfall of Munich's Soviet government, the Bavarian People's Party created a conservative government, whose leaders on one side were a little bit pro-monarchy, as it has been said, servants to Rome, and on the other side hostile towards the communists and Jews. With all the restrictions in their program, they were torn between these two other forces seeking unity of the state. When the state socialist government in Berlin demanded disarming of the Bavarian resident militias, Munich's government answered, quote, "Weapons need to be taken away from those who want them," unquote. State Council Mayer thought differently. Quote, "The state's government is a disguised Soviet government, and these men advised the Jews. This question would be more at ease if certain circles of the religious community would hold back a little, especially by not showing publicly that they take for granted an enjoyable life while others are in need." The Conservative Party demanded that inciting of the, you get that? The Conservative Party demanded that inciting of the general public by politically minded Jews from abroad should finally come to an end because their actions are detested, also by their occasional respectable Bavarian believers. They may have believed that, but they didn't do anything about it. That's the problem. They did not even spare Hitler by putting him in jail, but because of an insufficient evidence, they would let him go the next day to speak again. The most powerful personality in the government, Munich's police president, Poltner, made a distinction between immigrant Eastern Jews and the local Western Jews. Now, this is a big this is a big thing, and I talk about this every once in a while. These Western Jews were many of the type that integrated into the culture of the West, and they were a lot different than the Eastern Jews, than the bad racial Jews. And because of this, his strong actions, according to various opinions, he was loved or feared even far beyond the country's borders. After seizure of power, Hitler took a trip with the district commander Wagner around Munich. They passed Prince's Karl Place, which was called in the vernacular Hero's Place, after the previous president of the Bavarian People's Party. Then Hitler asked him, "What is a pension of a hero?" And at the response, he fell into a rage. A former president of Bavaria can't live on 600 marks. It was a salary of a local school principal. "Make sure, Wagner, that his pension is doubled." In November 1923, everything was usual. The pact was made. The Bavarian government and Hitler's National Socialists agreed, a la Mussolini, to march on Berlin in order to chase November's criminals, who in November 1918, from their armchairs, stabbed the German army with a dagger in the back in a war that should never have been. Remember this. You don't say we win or lose a war. You say the white race has lost every war we've been in. Name me one war that the white race ultimately didn't lose. Soon enough, it became clear to Hitler that an alliance with State Commissar General Kahr with the Bavarian government has in fact created one, a revolt, and is not about to lead to a march on Berlin. Hitler, out of his realization, came to a conclusion. If Bolshevism continues to march west, this means Christian culture is in danger and must be saved. See, it doesn't say white culture. Doesn't say Aryan culture, it's Christian culture. And a common interest between Bavaria and France should exist. But with radicalization of the north, it can come to a separation of Bavaria. Not because a separatist tendency grows here, but because there is no other way out. Now, you notice right wing in this country, most of the time they say Christian America. They never say white America. It's always Christian America. In other words, the only white people are Christian. A Bavarian revolution of the Federalists was planned for November 12, 1923, but Hitler forestalled it and threw them into his own pocket. In the evening of November 8, Hitler put on his long black coat and pinned to it the shiny silvery Iron Cross First Class. In a citizen's brewery cellar, the state commissar, General Kahr, spoke in front of several thousand people. Well, that's a big meeting. They were not ordinary people, but invited members of the government, parliamentarians, executives of various authorities, military personnel of the old Bavarian army, as well as representatives of the German armed forces, of a university, of the press, and of artistic circles, if not to mention persons from financial and economical elite. The capitalists. After a while, festively dressed and unnoticeable, Hitler squeezed into the assembly hall and, under the pretext of a security measure, ordered an on-duty police officer who recognized him to clean up hall's entrance and the street. With this trick, the police cleared the way for Hitler's SA, which, armed with machine guns, immediately marched in and took position. That's the way to get into a meeting, man. Due to this action, the police commander had a second thought and by telephone helplessly asked his chief commander, Dr. Frick, for orders, and he got them. Quote, "Keep the street in order," unquote. Therefore, within the Third Reich, he became the Secretary of Interior with preference for keeping streets in order. At this time, the gentleman in a dark frock coat jumped onto a chair, fired a shot into the ceiling. Can you ever imagine David Duke doing that? Stormed through the silent majority to a rostrum and yelled, still with a revolver in his hands, "National revolution has broken out!" The assembly room is occupied by 600 heavily armed men. If right now you will not be quiet, I will set a machine gun on top of the gallery. State Army and country police are already approaching under the swastika flag. I don't know too many right-wingers or anybody else that would be that brash today. You got to give him E for effort. Then Hitler pushed the three astonished dictators of Bavaria, Gentleman Karr, von Lossow, and Seisser, into a side room. Famous First World War pilot Goering, with his pourlaisirs around his neck, stepped up to the rostrum and made it clear that in the adjacent room the state government will be formed. And actually, he commented, you should be happy for you can have your beer here. Maybe some Kentucky Fried Chicken, too. General Ludendorff, commander-in-chief during the First World War, for a long time on Hitler's and Goering's side, was brought in. At that time, a national and social revolution was his wish. Therefore, during the war, he rejected nobility title offered to him by the emperor. Hitler assigned positions and introduced to the gathering names of persons, even those who were not present, governing the state, Hitler, National Army, Ludendorff, Police Chief Seisser, authority of the provisional German national government, is the sole power in this land, and herein conscripts the hotbed of vice in Berlin. This morning the people will either find a German national government, or all of us will be dead. Everyone rejoiced over this good prospect, which these four men in the side room of the assembly had taken up on their shoulders, and all with their hands were betting on a deal with Hitler. Next morning at the Field Army Hall, someone permitted to shoot at the people who, in obedience to Hitler's orders, overnight trickled into Munich in thousands on foot and trucks. On the house walls following the notes were glued, quote, these statements, which at gunpoint were forced on us, General von Lossow, Colonel Seisser, and me, are null and void. The notes were subscribed by General von Karr, a commissar of the state. In the vanguard, Hitler and Ludendorff were marching, Hitler with a gun in his hand, a man rushing to the front, shouting, quote, don't shoot! His Excellency Ludendorff is coming. But the shots commenced thundering at the Field Army Hall. 14 National Socialists died at Odeon's Place. Two more fell on Rome's side, while he was surrounded in a neighborhood by the country police. Numerous were wounded, among them Goering, with a shot to his abdomen. And Hitler, who had with a dislocated arm, ran for safety. The rioters were shot by the fellow men who, on previous days, swore allegiance to them. Goering escaped abroad. Hitler found shelter in a villa by Uffing at the Staffel Lake, but police found him nevertheless, while Mrs. Heffenstiel, born Hein in the USA, a Western Jewess, was taking care of the wounded men. 10 years after seizing power, the NSDAP announced, all of you did not die for nothing, and some truth lies in this. Quote, through this rebellious deed, a unity of the Reich state was guaranteed, for within a next few years, a planned strike by the Bavarian sectarians was prevented. Reich's youth leader, Baldur von Schirr, half-American, who learned to speak German at the age of 11, today on retirement, wrote, they also built from cathedrals, but for us the altars are terraces made of the Field Army Hall. Unquote. In the beginning of 24, Hitler and his rebels were sentenced to a confinement, but no earlier than Christmas he became a free man again. Such a tremendous strength was thwarted at a moment when it wanted to send the unsolved, unloved government with help of machine guns to the devil or to the Orient, for the times were like this. This saying from the great historian Trischke, and Hitler pounded it into people's heads until the last stable boy in the poorest corner of the forest knew who is to be blamed for his bad luck, but he did not reveal all that Tritschke recommended. Quote, they should become Germans, regardless of their beliefs, and holiest reminders of their ancient times, which are venerable to us all, unquote. At the Bat Bar of Munich, this happened in the 20s, behind a table set together with a slim Hitler, recently dismissed from the army, a stocky gentleman speaking Viennese jargon. After a sip of beer, lost in thoughts, the man was glancing at the waitress's ankles with his little black eyes. He was a Hungarian Jew, son of a rich silk merchant and very close friend of poet Dietrich Eckart, who published a small anti-Jewish paper, quote, for a good German. Eckart mastered very well a German style of speaking cultivated by Eastern Jews, which he learned in Berlin thanks to his association with best social circles. Through him, Hitler met this peculiar man now paying for the beer, who disguised himself under a fictitious name, Ignaz Travis Lincoln, first as a Hebrew student of theology, and shortly thereafter as a sectarian preacher of the gospel in New York, later as a pastor in England, and as a director of an oil company, as a representative of liberals in the British lower chamber of parliament, and then as a spy for Germany. All of these functions did he almost simultaneously. Britons still assume that Trubisky Lincoln was the only foreign agent who has ever become a member of the lower chamber, if they only knew. The conversation was about Jews and Jewish global endeavors. There you're right, Mr. Hitler, exercised Trubisky. Exaggerations about the Jewish people have been their own fault, and for they always have fought among themselves. Think about Karl Marx, his exact name was Mordecai, whether you agree to this or not. And what he said was, quote, what is worldly Jewish culture? Share, thievery, who is in the worldly God, money. And remember what Weininger, our great Vienna philosopher, also a Jew, quote, the Jew does not know what love means. He only knows the body. He wants to defile it. Quote, now tell me, please, Mr. Trubisky. Now this was the Jew, Hitler asked. What do you think about Palestine as a solution to the whole caboodle? Two beers, Trubisky Lincoln exclaimed and mused, the Jew. After a moment and another sip, he beamed with his beautiful Vienna charm loudly and gaily. I've got it. The National Socialist and the National Zionist unite. Your wish has God's ear. To this, Hitler responded solemnly, it is the same aim, but the means are different. The Lord be with us. And he took a deep sip of his beer. To Trubisky Lincoln began talking enthusiastically about a declaration of Anglo-Jewish Foreign Minister Balfour. Well, the whole declaration is only a letter from Balfour to his lovely Lord Rothschild, who was in his 70s. But the case presented in this letter is very simple. The Britons should give us their land, and we will bring our people there. However, some minor pressure might be necessary. We want to build a house which will take in all the Jews, and they as well as all other nations will rest in peace. Then he plowed eagerly. Into the existing differences between Western and Eastern Jews who build up the economy. The ship's owner, Hamburg, Mr. Berlin, or a top-secret Councilman Simpson, and other people liked him and who helped the princesses to get out of mud when their safes emptied. Bleichroeder was the main banker to the Emperor Wilhelm, that is who, and Strauss, with the Vienna Waltz, was a gift to the people from heaven, unquote. He shook himself slowly and suddenly in a rage, he continued, and how about the Eastern Jews, who will smash the Warsaw Ghetto, this hiding place of the underworld deserves? What now, inquired the curious 30-year-old party speaker. I will tell you what, Trubisky intimately put his fleshy hand on Hitler's lower arm. Quote, I know you are Frankenberger. Tell me, what do we do? The Western Jews of the Reich of Austria and Hungary have to do with these bug-ridden Jews in Kafkin's over there. What do they have in common? Hitler briskly pulled out of his arm from Trotsky's hand and with his eyes flashing said, never say Frankenberger, or I will yell loudly about you, Moses Pinkels. Moses Pinkels from Hungary, Jew. Pinkels, alias Trebitsch Lincoln, was a silent personality. He ordered another beer and retorted concretely, quote, how much do you need? 100,000 was the response. Trubisky pulled three bundles out of a side pocket and threw them on the table. Count it! And Hitler did. 30,000 within a month of the Volksheimer Beobachter, People's Observer newspaper, will be mine. Trubisky, the Jew, got up and took his coat. You should know, he pointed his finger at the still seated Hitler, that the anti-Semitism can be of value only if the Jews take it upon their own hands. From yours, Hitler looked up. No, from the painter Lieberman, a Jew like me. Hitler stared into his empty mug. How right he is, just like an artist. He mumbled and got up too. Very interesting. Very interesting. You notice how many people in here were either all Jew or part Jew or Western Jews and hooked up to the United States and England by birth and so forth. To the revolutionary editor of the party newspaper was introduced Rosenberg's old friend, a Hungarian Jew, Holodzai, also called Holch, from Holland, son of a rabbi. On December 17, 1920, Hitler became the owner of the People's Observer newspaper, and an administrative duty was assigned to Dietrich Eckart. After a while, the newspaper was shut down for a month and later for a week because of its Jew-baiting themes. This raised its circulation in the following years to over 100,000. When the prohibition affected Hitler's right to speak, then he printed his speeches to create subversion in the Reich's army, as was meant by Hitler. Soldiers received special issues. On November 16, 1921, Hitler recorded in Munich's court register that he is in possession of all shares of the People's Observer newspaper, which before were manipulated by the Thule Society. Since that day, Hitler was not a pauper anymore. Trotsky Lincoln, the Jew, served as one of the best anti-Jewish secretaries of the Observer. Later, this eater of Eastern Jews praised the former chief of police Ernst Pohner as follows. Quote, once Chief Pohner, with his loyal advisor, District Magistrate Frick, on his side, was the only high-ranking government dignitary with the courage to be first a German and then an official. When Pinkels, a full Jew alias Trotsky Lincoln, after his unsuccessful attempt to make the British Empire insecure as far as Tibet, died suddenly. On the front page of the People's Observer was placed the obituary, honoring him extraordinarily and signed by the editor-in-chief, Alfred Rosenberg. You notice this East-West Jew thing? What do you think? I don't think they were trying to get the Eastern Jews over to Palestine. It was the Western Jews. And it looks like to me that the so-called concentration camps were either to kill off the Eastern Jews or to be as a way station on the way to the ships that the Nazis had signed a deal with the Zionists to get to Israel. If you're thinking and you're hearing this right, and maybe you need to read the book too, an assumption is coming to the fore, which makes things a lot different than what you've been told. Eckart and Hitler, however, were not in a hurry to flee, for they had shelter with a lady of the highest elite, the wife of the Jewish piano manufacturer, Bechstein. Eckart knew her very well from his Berlin days, so Hitler became her good friend, too, and there he is always welcome. To him she was a good asset, due to her many connections. For her, Hitler was such an asset in a field of various provisions. Later, when he was imprisoned at Fortress Landsberg for his troublesome and rebellious endeavors, the police received a statement from Mrs. Helen Beckstein, a Jewess, about him, to wit, two or three times my husband supported Hitler in publishing the People's Observer newspaper in Munich. I have helped him too, but not with money. Rather, I gave him many pieces of art and noticed that he may do whatever he wants with them. These pieces of art were the highest value. Mr. Frank, also of Jewish origin, Berlin's coffee producer under the brand name Korn Frank, through Mrs. Beckstein and Eckert, was acquainted with Hitler. He entered into contact with Hitler and loaned him over 60,000 Swiss francs. As a security for the loan, Adolf Hitler transferred to Mr. Richard Frank an emerald platinum pendant with cut diamonds, a ruby platinum ring with cut diamonds, a sapphire platinum ring with cut diamonds, a ring with 14-carat cut diamond, a Venetian relief sculpture, and a red silk Spanish case with a elytron decorated with the golden stitchery. This loan was to be paid off by August 20th, 1926. Have you read a lot of this stuff anyplace else? I mean, people can say it's a lie, but it seems to be pretty well looked into. We'll see what the right wing says when they throw up their hands in disgust at Metzger. The very lovely Hofstadler villa in Munich, as Hitler described it, stood wide open for the successful drummer. He liked to call it as such. The director of Fine Arts Publishers, known by her maiden name as Mrs. Hein, a Jewess from New York, since a shocking experience during the Soviet dictatorship changed her pacifistic attitude into the opposite one, and her half-Jewish son Ernst became an inspired, enthusiastic Hitler fan, called by his friends Putzi. This Harvard graduate was an heir to this well-established business, and he was glad to help anyone with foreign money during inflation. At one time, he gave $1,000, a fortune in those crazy days. Just think if people found out in this struggle, whether right or leftist or whatever you are, but racial, if they found out that the leader was making deals with all these Jews. I mean, like people like David Duke and so forth, they'd be ruined if people really found evidence of that. He might be doing that, but I don't know. I have no evidence he has. But here is Hitler hobnobbing and being financed by all kinds of Jews. Something to think about, isn't it? Okay, let's see here. Back then at Berchtesgaden, where Hitler liked to retire with male and female companions, Ernst Hofstadler was a welcome visitor, and as a joker made them laugh, imitating manners of his former teacher, Father Heinrich Himmler, who had raised him and a few princesses. Later on, Goering and his men scared this somewhat frightened friend of the art, who often expressed his point of view, and not too firmly. Mostly he spoke of his sufferings during the First World War in New York, when his shop windows were smashed by rogues, which to him was much worse than any soldier's war experience at the front. In February 37, at the airport Stocken, they put on Putzi in his shaking bones a parachute, and he was then chief of foreign press of the NSDAP, and flew him at the Führer's command on an allegedly secret mission to the Spanish war arena. The airplane was filled with hand grenades hanging everywhere. The seats were made of bare metal. During the flight, blood-starved companions passed around pictures of mutilated corpses of the Spanish women. The whole event was filmed. At a certain moment, the pilot set the plane to shake and the engine to grumble. It was just a funny undertaking which ended at the airport in Kleinpolenz, close to Leipzig. The wonderful film was played before leader Hitler and received an appropriate applause, so that Dr. Ernst Hamstegel was led to believe that his life was in danger and that his contribution to German society was finished, and under such dictum, the chief of foreign press disappeared. Even Goering's letter on March 37 could not entice him to return home to the Reich from Switzerland. I assure you that this whole affair was supposed to be only a harmless joke. I expect you believe my words, but this was not convincing enough. That reminds me of when I was in the army over there in Europe, and I flew from London down to Madrid and DC-3, or some people call it a C-47. Good plane, but didn't have a heater in it in the back. A pilot's must have been warm. And going over the Pyrenees Mountain, it got so damn cold when I got to Madrid and stepped out of the plane, I couldn't feel the tarmac. My feet were frozen. It was horrible, man. Anyhow, that's a little side issue. Oh, one thing about Spain at the time, you didn't get in and out of that country being stopped and searched. They had all these border entry points, and they really checked you out good. Yeah, and you couldn't have an American flag at, I had the name of the Air Force base on the tip of my tongue. Arion, I think it was Arion. Arleon or something like that. What's his name? Wouldn't let the American Air Force or anybody else fly an American flag in Spain. Okay, many bad stories were heard about Ernst Hamstegel, but about Hitler, the worst. His sister, Erna, obviously was also not immune, but whenever Hitler made absence of his wife by placing hands on his chest, he always deeply recalled her husband. During the war, Dr. Hamstegel, a refugee from the swastika flag, became an advisor to President Roosevelt, whom he knew from his Harvard student days. Another interesting point. According to his own research into the matter of origin, Hitler and Roosevelt were of common Jewish stock. This thought stuck fast through all those years and decades in the mind of the vagabond of two worlds, as the Jewish journalist Rudolf Kalmer, on the day of Rathenau's assassination, 1922, told him, quote, "Also, in the opinion of Rathenau, the condemned march of Asiatic hordes from the Brandenburg Marquis Sands is a hopeless scramble to make oneself into the likeness of Balder Blondes, Norse gods of Blondes. God have mercy upon us Jews and you Germans when one day the mental poison of the Jewish self-hatred, or in the world's view, a split insanity of mentally and moral defective mongrels, will attach itself to the brainless, brutal instincts of the beastly, blonde, trimmed gangsters." Probably never before things were said more explicitly about Hitler and Heydrich. Gottfried Feder, the leading party theorist on economic questions, didn't have any scruples about taking money from the Jews. This educated and traveling extensively man made multitude of contacts with businesses, banks, and industries, and for the NSDAP personally mediated funds from Jewish banks. These funds of several thousands of marks or francs which came from the Jews grew to millions. To millions also grew highly desired U.S. dollars, about these monies flowing from Mendelssohn and Company, from von Kuhn Loeb and Company, from Warburg, and from Samuel and Samuel, will be reported on in another part of this research. Likewise, about the fulsomely praised English newspaper magnate Rothermere, who, when looking at him in the spotlight, will be seen as a German Jew by the name of Stern, the man who, by deliverance of German socialists of Nuremberg, crucially eased Hitler's way into the northern Germany, was Mr. Stryker. It would be worthwhile to pay closer attention to this greatest anti-Jew agitator of the Nazi movement. after the First World War as professional elementary school teacher, was the first to join the Independent Social Democrats, to which belonged Eisner and the Munich Soviet. The Eastern Jews didn't trust him, so he left and founded the German Socialist Party in Nuremberg. At the 1920 conference in Salzburg, it came to an agreement between pretty well competitive anti-Jewish parties, the GSP and the NSDAP, to the north of the River Main, and the GSP would be active, and to the south, Hitler's National Socialists. One exception to this game was Julius Streicher. He did not go along with Hitler and remained leader of the South GSP with headquarters in Nuremberg. In a due course, Streicher found Hitler by using virulent invectives, verbal, and printed in a widely circulated weekly magazine, The German Socialist. Streicher went even further and tried to ruin Hitler with the help of the NSDAP's founder, Drexler, on his side. This situation lasted for 2 years. Then a former military news service employee obtained evidence proving that Streicher was not a pure Aryan. Hitler asked Streicher to come from Nuremberg to Munich, and they met in Schwabinger's Osteria Bavaria restaurant. And by a cup of coffee, Hitler put the evidence under his nose. Streicher, that is. Only a few days passed by when Streicher, with his Nuremberg comrades in arms, put himself under command of the Munichians, Munich. In this way, a gate to the north was pushed wide open. After only a few weeks of the limited Bavarian National Socialist Party, rose Hitler's movement of the whole Germany. Quote, whoever wanted to get close to him only could come close through a manly deed, unquote, said later Streicher, who in the meantime foppished himself with a mustache a la Hitler. He was the person who on November 9, 1923, at the Field Army Hall in Munich, jumped in front of the gun barrel shouting, quote, don't shoot, His Excellency Ludendorff is coming, unquote. With a low-life style, he, Ludendorff, bade to a foreground his best. In response to all the complaints about this partly Semitic anti-Semite, Hitler had only one answer. Quote, maybe you don't like the nose of the fellow party member, Streicher, but remember that when he was lying next to me on the pavement at the Field Army Hall, I promised myself never to leave him as long as he doesn't leave me. When Streicher, at the end of the war, the leader of Franconia, crossed the line and was thrown out of the NSDAP by the highest party court, Hitler changed his mind. He wasn't kept in the party as a regional leader, but as a publisher of the party's magazine, Stürmer. In English, that's a storm man. The anti-Jewish gutter magazine, founded in 1923, lasted for the next two decades, full of stories about Jewish ritual murders and sexual crimes. In the Third Reich, it was only permitted pornography magazine far ahead of its time. Publishing chief of the People's Observer, Mr. Ammann, puts it straight from the hip, and that's is a filthy swine paper, and I will not touch it. Well, in other words, we're still indoctrinating young people with a lot of stuff that's not true about all the, you know, they go so far about the Jewish crimes and pornography that they go too far. And whenever somebody goes overboard, you don't have to go overboard to have put the tail on the Jew, pin the tail on the Jew. But much of the stuff that's still around today is fabricated stuff by Streicher and people like that. Then the gutter articles. This disgraced magazine stirred up sensations under the forest canopy, drawings which were beneath dignity, and from which sensitive souls had bad dreams. The designer of these drawings was a Jew, Jonas Volk, alias Fritz Brandt. In other words, most of that Streicher stuff was drawn up by a Jew. You know, it fits. They're into pornography all the time. Why wouldn't they want to get into control an anti-Semitic magazine and overstate the case? In 1919, after leaving the Communist Independent Socialist Party, Streicher was afraid of Jewish revenge. Fellow party members in Hamburg smiled pitifully at him when, upon arrival, he insisted on preparing coffee himself, as if the waiter in a dining caboose on a train wanted to poison him. And he could swear to this. The revenge came later as it caught up with him at Nuremberg, where war criminals were hanged, but he was strangled. In 1946, standing in front of 13 steps of the gallows, he yelled loudly, "Heil Hitler!" When he was questioned about his name, he answered brusquely, "You know it." The priest accompanied him up the stairs, and when at the top, he shrieked, "Purim Festival!" 1946, now is the time to go to God. Purim is the festival of joy after slaughtering of Gentiles. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. You got to separate these self-hating Jews out and discover who they are, because there's a lot of them in the conservative right-wing movement. And something else. Now, we've had Jews infiltrate the Klan, National Socialists back east. One committed suicide in the house with Roy Frankhauser. And himself was a question. He looked Jewish. He's dead now. And then you got the Frank Cohen, who almost everybody took him serious. He was a good speaker. But it's obvious to see that that whole operation in Skokie was led to do just the opposite of what he led his troops to believe. It was helping the Jews. Drew all that attention on Skokie. See, that's how they operate. They get involved and then they take an issue beyond its desired effect or wish, and then a lot of the guys in the right wing will go along with it and say, "Oh man, he really hates the Jews. He's going to Skokie." I thought about that. Was strange at the time, strange. But I do remember a television show that he and David Duke appeared on, and I got to tell you that Frank Cohen gave a better speech than David Duke, that's for sure. Isn't that sad? I think I've still got that tape someplace in my menagerie here beneath the ground. Now, I hope you got today the video that we took off TV from the half-Jew Geraldo Rivera, who's got a Star of David on between his thumb and his forefinger, which I brought out on a TV show, and boy, that really upset him. I got to him with that. Anyhow, I've sent those videos out. If you didn't get them or can't figure out how to display them, let me know, and we'll figure out something. Sometimes I'm not the best technician on something like that, but if you like to see me ream out the Reverend Al Sharpton, back when he weighed about 300 pounds, you got to see that. It's sort of funny. And get it around. Get it up on YouTube. I can't get it up there because I'm banned from YouTube. So anyhow, 14:05, and I'll be back with you tomorrow on Wotan. No, wait. Tears Day. I always screw that up. Tears Day. We'll see you. In the meantime, don't believe. Well, wait a minute here. I think I got a couple of other things to say. In the news, of course, they're going after North Korea, which I'm dubious of whether North Korea did the operation on Sony. But even if they did, it's even worse because remember Clinton when he gave them hundreds of thousands of gallons of fuel oil for the North Koreans to get through the winter? Remember when he gave them nuclear material to build nuclear energy there in North Korea? Remember all that we gave them? Huh, people forget too quick. I wouldn't be concerned about them at all. In fact, if the North Koreans cost Sony a few million, I don't give a shit. It's not our fight. In fact, I think it's sort of funny. And all these limp-wristed weaklings in the press are always calling everybody a horrible terrorists and all this, and sometimes the people's actions is pretty rough. But to call them cowards, with somebody that has the balls to walk up to somebody and like in New York and shoot two cops to death, he's not a coward. I mean, according to my standards. In fact, he's got a lot of heavy balls there. because a coward wouldn't have the guts to do that. There's probably tens of thousands of blacks and other people would like to do something like that, but they don't have the guts to do it. To call him a coward is ridiculous.